Welcome to another broadcast of the Word for Life radio program. With me in the studio is the co-host of the broadcast, Dr. Les Olala, Chancellor of Northern Baptist Bible College. And Doc, it's our privilege as we continue the series that we began for the new year, laying the foundation for a great year spiritually. It's our privilege to have a guest host on the broadcast today, Evangelist Kevin Brownfield. Kevin, it's always a blessing to have you here.
Oh, it has been such a blessing for me to just listen and be refreshed again with these truths.
We've been looking at the indispensable elements for laying a foundation to have a great year spiritually. And we kind of boil those elements down to two. We needed wisdom and we need love. And in the last two broadcasts, we've been looking at what that indispensable element of love looks like. We noted that defining that term involved a certain kind of love, love that doesn't expect anything in return. And we looked at the Apostle Paul's ministry to this very church, where he said he would gladly spend and be spent for them, to describe that love. And then, Doc, you talked to us a little bit about the dignity of that love, the importance. And we looked at 1 Corinthians 13, and we looked at the first three verses, and we noted that love pulls rank on a number of things. For example, speech and study and really even great acts of faith when we step forward by faith, and even great acts of service if we don't do them out of a heart of love, and if we don't build that foundation in, then all of these are empty. And that brings us into the heart of the passage, beginning in verse 4. We're going to talk today and in the next broadcast about a description of love. What does this actually look like, and how can we spot it in our life? And so, Doc, maybe you could just jump right into that and take us through that passage as we think about our own life and developing this quality.
We pick up in verse 4, and it begins describing the work of love in our lives. First of all, love suffers long. Description number one. Now, what does that mean? Obviously, we're looking at patience, having to do a checklist on ourselves. How patient have I been with people? And I think it's twofold. One is patience with circumstances God puts me in. The other is patience with people that God brings into my life. It's very often tempting to give in and say, I'm not going to be patient, I'm not going to be long-suffering. And oftentimes, when we become impatient, we are no longer concerned about the welfare of the people with whom we are fellowshipping and to whom we are ministering.
Which is the second quality in the list. We're no longer kind.
And kind there, it actually has a meaning of being useful. It's a usefulness.
Mm-hmm. Two things come to mind as you're beginning to lay this out is, we laid this foundation talking about love pulling rank, and I got to thinking about Hebrews 4. This goes far beyond the external. This is motive stuff. Even my reactions and responses are not always known to others, but yet there's a lot of stuff that goes on in my heart. And what you're doing is you're actually beginning to hold up a mirror in front of me as we're kind of walking through this.
Exactly.
And I was thinking the other day, my wife asked me, it was really early in the morning, and she asked me to get up and run to the store. And so I ran to the store, and I'm driving down the road in my car, and all of a sudden I looked in the rearview mirror, and my hair was going every which direction. It had been pasted way out of place, and there was no way to get it in place. And I'm looking at myself saying, what in the world are people going to think when I walk in there? And really, that's what this is. This is kind of holding the mirror up for me, and it's saying, do you look like this reflection? Because these are the qualities of Christ, and it's asking me if I look like that. And so when you, even when you're just saying that, you know, love is patient, all of a sudden I'm beginning to think in the last couple of days of things with my own kids where that wasn't the truth. And so, you know, I'm already under conviction.
If we're not patient with the circumstances that God puts us in or with the people that God brings into our life, we're not useful to God.
Or others. Why do we not suffer long? Because I am the center of me. Why are we not kind? Because my life is all about me.
I'm not going to spend or be spent for anybody but me.
Right.
And that's kind of the fundamental driving point through here is you have one view of looking at Christ and others, and the other view of just looking at me. That kind of seems to be the constant point.
I think that is the idea. Is my life about me, or is it about me being a mirror of what Christ's character is and what God is like? That's the convicting part. My job description is to be a reflector of the character of our God.
Well, in the next three in the list, envies not, vaunteth not self, and is not puffed up, really are the antithesis. They're the exact opposite of living a life that's about me.
When we envy, when we boast of ourselves, when we puff up ourselves, it is the opposite of what we are supposed to be doing. It's the opposite of Philippians chapter 2 living, which is really humility. I would encourage people to, if you could get references, if you could get word studies, to take these words apart piece by piece, and you begin to see the envying, not the jealousy, the zeal that you have for yourself as opposed to seeing others prosper. And sometimes envy is not wanting what another person has. It's wishing that person didn't have it. And then vaunting not itself, is not braggadocious, does not talk conceitedly. And this isn't always a boasting thing. This is often always couched in ministry goals. Some people have a perception of themselves as being the ultimate leaders and the ultimate success. And I am the ultimate model of what you are to follow. But you don't know this until they become critical of someone else. How do you make yourself look better? You belittle somebody else.
Mm.
Somebody doesn't have your music standard. So you exalt yourself way up here.
Wow.
Even though that person may not be in violation of a Bible principle, he doesn't understand like you understand. And consequently, write that person off or send him an email that's hot enough you'd have to hold it with asbestos gloves.
I've gotten a few of those.
See, so a lot of times these boastings, I've set myself up as the ultimate standard, not God, not God's word. You follow my standard or I will have you done in.
It's interesting to me how many times Paul deals with the tongue throughout the whole of the New Testament documents. In essence, he's dealing with love.
I can show a lot of no love by words. And if I exalt myself and belittle somebody else, then I am really putting myself on a pedestal that is not going to hold the fire test at the Bema.
Doc, what is this next one, not puffed up, and how does that relate to does not behave itself unseemly?
Well, I think it's not arrogant. You look at the listings of what does God hate, proud look, because it goes all the way back to the garden. What got Adam out of place? Lucifer, what got him out of place? I will exalt, I will. And then does not behave itself unseemly. There is an acting rudely and carelessly and recklessly in regards to somebody else where I would puff myself up. I then begin to think I can live the way I want to live, behave myself unseemly because I am the creator and the master of my own life and of my own being. And I think where it says it is not overbearing, which I think is a major part of unseemly behavior, is an overbearing type person. And it doesn't mean that he is acting in a very unholy way necessarily, but in a way that is overbearing and borderline crude.
You know, the three you just listed, vaunteth not itself, not puffed up, does not behave itself unseemly. One seems like it's the philosophy of pride, then it's the attitude of pride, and then it's the action of pride, behaving rudely ultimately.
Yeah, I think that's a good way to summarize that. When you see the whole pride-driven part of it, that really, I think, is a good way to summarize that.
We're talking here in very convicting terms. Because this is exactly where a lot of us live. You started it off by saying this all starts out in the home.
That's where it's most easily manifested. A lack of love is most easily manifested in our homes. Because we get up, our character is revealed at home. Our reputation is known once we leave the home.
Mm-hmm.
So we love ourselves way too much to let our reputation be marred, but we don't love our family enough to coach the feelings that we have inside. Sometimes of impatience and very quick retorts coming back with maybe cutting remarks and so on.
What about seeketh not her own and is not easily provoked? How would you characterize those two qualities?
Seeking not her own is the opposite of Philippians 2, not preoccupied with its own things. The preoccupation is not me.
Mm-hmm.
Some people get up, they draw a circle, step in the middle of that circle and say, it's all about me. And then outside that circle is the question, who is out there who can serve me? Is not seeking her own. Opposite of the model of Christ, who thought himself of no reputation, took on him the form of a servant. The opposite of that would be serving. Is not easily provoked. Obviously, I would put in a different category of anger. Does not get angry quickly. And that is hard to do sometimes. Become defensive about a situation because we are very conscious of ourselves and of our own reputations and of our own things. The anger factor is always there. Some people don't have that much of an issue, but everybody has a boiling point.
I'm a layperson. I'm listening to the series. I'm getting convicted by what you're saying. And I were to come to you and just say, okay, I need help. I understand the definition of love, and I saw its description, but now that you're actually talking here about the specific parts of it, boy, am I finding out that I'm not loving. Where do I go from here? How do I, you know, let's just talk about these few that we've talked about.
1 John 1:9, if we confess our sin, he is faithful and just to forgive us our sin, cleanse us from all unrighteousness. We need to do this on a daily basis. Every time we take communion, what are we exhorted to do? Let every man examine himself. Now, God has given us that privilege and responsibility every day to examine ourselves. Mm-hmm. Where do we stand? Mm-hmm. How are we? And if we never look in the mirror, as Kevin said, then we don't know what we look like. You open God's word in the mirror, say, oh, God, I agree with you. And it's not like I go into throes of depression and now I'm all messed up. No, God, thank you for loving me enough to show me that.
Mm-hmm.
God, I agree with you. This is in my life and it's sin and you're on your way. It's not like you carry this and you mope over it. You go and acknowledge it as sin. And then if there's a person involved that need to ask forgiveness, go to that person before the sun sets. Forgive me, I have not loved you. I have not been loving.
Doc, very practical help here. Thank you for taking us through this first little section in the description of love, and I know that we're looking forward to the rest of the qualities that have been laid out for us. Those of you listening, this is our New Year's series entitled Laying the Foundation for a Great Spiritual Year. I hope that you will go to the website www.thewordforlife.org to get the first broadcast in this series as well as this one, and we'll look forward to joining you again the next time that we're together. Until then, may the Lord bless you.